We can argue till the cows come home about the contributing factors and effects of climate change. We can argue even more about the most effective path forward. But a few things are not really up for debate. First, there's no question that Utahns care about air quality. The Utah Foundation's own survey work has repeatedly proven that. There's no question about the importance of water to our state. And there's no question that in response to climate change, the economy is rapidly changing, whether we like it or not, and regardless of who sits in the White House or Congress. We are moving toward a cleaner economy, and the momentum has gone beyond public policy levers into the private sector modus operandi. That is driving economic challenges that Utah will have to confront, but the clean economy is also driving opportunities that we should seize. We shouldn't just leave them to other states. Addressing those challenges and opportunities is the subject of a brand new Utah Foundation report called Going for the Green: How Utah Can Thrive in the New Climate Economy. Utah Foundation Vice President and Director of Research Sean Tigan was the principal author of the report. Sean and I were recently joined by members of the Western Resource Advocate staff to talk about the report and various environmental concerns for our region. You'll hear that conversation on this edition of Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. I'm Peter Reichardt. We are joined by Julianne Basinger, Senior Communications Manager for the Clean Energy Program at Western Resource Advocates, and Nick Scow, Western Resource Advocates, Utah Government Affairs Manager. For our audience, what is Western Resource Advocates? Julianne?
Western Resource Advocates is a regional organization that works to protect the lands, air, and water of the West. We provide on-the-ground solutions, working with state policymakers and regulators to craft the best solutions possible to the most challenging problems facing the West. And we work to ensure the lives and livelihoods to sustain the vibrancy of the West.
And what are those big challenges? And if Julianne, you could talk about the bigger Western picture, and Nick, maybe you address specific issues to Utah.
Sure, across the West and globally, of course, the largest challenge that we're facing is the effects of climate change. Western Resource Advocates is working to provide on-the-ground solutions to this tough problem and the West's contribution to reducing the fossil fuel emissions that cause the harmful climate pollution that drives climate change. So, you know, that becomes a complicated issue as you start to look at solutions to that problem in the clean energy program. You know, that can involve finding ways to help the utility sector transition to carbon-free electricity here in Utah, particularly where transportation emissions account for so much of the air quality and other pollution problems that we have. That can involve strategies to transition to electrified transportation. We're seeing that also on the national front with the automakers starting to commit to transitioning to their manufacturing being all electric by 2030 or so. So I think we're going to see a real change on the transportation front, and we need to make sure that those vehicles are powered by clean electricity as well. I mean, we're seeing more intense wildfires across the West, erratic weather patterns, prolonged drought, and the scientific consensus is that that's being driven by climate change. So we have a small window in which to act, and we're Westerners who live in the West here at Western Resource Advocates, and we're looking to find really viable solutions to help address this challenge.
Nick, can you talk about some of the things that worry you most here in Utah?
Yeah, so in Utah, you know, we're feeling the effects of climate change across the entire state. You know, we're warming twice as fast as the global average, and it's affecting industries like the agriculture industry and many others. You know, one of the things that we can do, and you pointed this out in your report, is really decarbonize the electricity sector. We have a higher portion of our electricity being provided by fossil fuel resources that are carbon emitting than customers of many other utilities across the West. And so we have an opportunity to do that, as well as electrifying the transportation sector, which will have the added benefit of not only reducing global warming carbon emissions, but also helping to clean our air, as we have, obviously, you know, along the Wasatch Front, major air quality problems. So that if we don't really make meaningful progress in reducing Utah's carbon emissions within the next 10 years, we're going to have, you know, major impacts to the state that are much worse than what we're seeing right now.
One of the things that we often talk about is the notion that if we here in Utah make major progress in addressing air quality issues, that we will by default be doing something significant for the overall emissions picture.
Yeah, that's right. And that's especially why it's important to clean up our electricity sector as well, because as we electrify the transportation sector, it'll have a lot more benefit if that's all coming from clean power in the first place. So there's a kind of a double dipping that we get there as we clean up our air quality and clean up the power sector at the same time.
Sean, let's talk about our report a little bit. We didn't try to determine how Utah can fix climate change, quote unquote. Rather, we looked at how Utah can seize opportunities. Can you talk about what some of those opportunities might be?
We looked at this really by sector, and there's a lot of stuff that we can be doing in Utah to, for lack of a better word, I guess, take advantage of some of these opportunities. There's a lot of stuff going on in the energy arena. So we in Utah, you know, we're pretty dependent upon coal-fueled energy across the state, but we're also really transitioning. We can really step up and gain a lot over in coming years with some of the natural resources we have. So if you look at all of the solar, we have so much solar capacity in the state, and we've got a lot of wind capacity in the state, and we're doing stuff with geothermal, and we're really in some ways on the cutting edge of doing some pretty exciting stuff in terms of hydrogen and generating electricity using hydrogen. So that's pretty impressive, I think, and exciting in terms of that sector. But you can look at transportation. We've been a little bit behind in terms of electric vehicle uptake, but we're starting to kind of, we're jumping ahead a little bit of the rest of the United States in terms of that. And we've got a lot of great infrastructure going along. You know, there are a lot more options than there were a few years ago. And there's going to be a whole host more options in 5 years from now. We're doing some exciting stuff in terms of natural resources sector. We're dipping our toes into, I think, some pretty exciting technologies. But I think that one big thing we'll see is over the next decade or so is that we're really going to be embracing this idea of having cleaner energy and using renewables for energy development.
Julianne and Nick, I saw recently the July numbers came out looking back at where we ended 2020 as a nation in terms of coal production. Turns out the level, and this is a continuation of a trend, this is not a pandemic-related blip, that the level of coal production in the U.S. was at its lowest level since 1965. What are the opportunities when we think about our Western communities in general and in Utah in particular? What are some of the opportunities out there for some of our communities that have depended on coal to make major shifts?
We're really focused on reducing carbon emissions from the electricity sector, and that has major impacts on communities across the West, including in Utah. So we're very supportive of efforts to help these communities transition, and we've been working for the last few years with the Coal Country Strike Team at the Gardner Institute and reaching out and building relationships with local leaders, because they really have, you know, a better understanding of what might work in their communities. But the idea that all we need to do is just transition and then, you know, people that used to work in coal plants can build solar panels, like, that's not how it works, and it's not that simple. Utah has, I think, actually done a pretty good job so far at looking at a varied approach. So it's manufacturing, it's tourism, it's expanding work from home opportunities and the tech sector. And so there's a lot of different things that we can do all together. But I think the other thing is that we really need to help these communities with some support. So whether that money comes from some of the federal funding that's now coming in, the state could help with that as well. We need to recognize that these communities helped power the prosperity of Utah with reliable, cheap power for the last 100 years. And we can't just turn our backs on that. Our organization is very supportive of coal transition efforts, and I'm glad that's something that you've highlighted in this report as well.
That is important. I'd just like to add too that this transition is occurring due to economic market forces as much as it is due to environmental concerns. In fact, probably even more so from market forces. Coal power is very expensive right now and is becoming increasingly expensive in comparison with renewable energy. You have zero fuel costs with renewable energy. So once you get things up and running, it's very cheap. And we're seeing record low prices for renewable energy. I mean, Los Angeles, a couple of years, inked a record deal for 1 cent per kilowatt hour for solar. So this is something that is very much being driven by market forces. Utah will need to reckon with those forces and recognize the opportunities. And I think that your report does a great job in outlining some of those opportunity areas for Utah to explore.
You know, I love that Julian brought that up. In terms of those market forces, like just over the past 40 or so years, you see that the way we Utah Foundation has a report on this from a couple of years ago, the way we could get that coal out of coal mines. I mean, it used to take, you know, a lot of people with a lot of picks and a lot of buckets and doing a lot of work that way. And really, that wasn't that long ago where you were using this kind of older way of gathering coal. And within the past 40 years or so, you have something very efficient. We lost a ton of jobs over the past 40 to 50 years because of that new kind of technology. And I don't want to sound Pollyanna about this, but like there are things that are happening that are kind of exciting in communities. Like if you look at Carbon County is named Carbon County for a reason. And right outside of Helper, there was a coal-fueled power plant that's no longer there. And they've had a lot of coal mining there in the past that's not there anymore. And you look at Helper now, I mean, Helper is awesome. Like it's become this super cool hidden gem of tourism, and it's not as maybe hidden as it was even 10 years ago. And I think that I may be deluding myself, but I see Helper as an absolute destination for people around the West, maybe within the next 10 years, because it has so much charm and there is so much to see, and it's got this cool other resource that much of Utah has in terms of mountains and outdoor activities and stuff. So with like broadband and telework and these kind of this tourism infrastructure, but with some monetary support is needed and educational support is needed, I think that a lot of things we as a state can come together and do a lot of things for and with rural communities.
One of the things that we're emphasizing here is that opportunities economically will be emerging. We just talked about the challenges, but there will also be a lot of opportunities out there in terms of new technologies and resources, et cetera. The entrepreneurial spirit in the state, the spirit of innovation in the state that is already very apparent across several sectors, and the fact that we have multiple projects and endeavors already underway, driving us toward this new climate economy, as we call it, does potentially position Utah to be a national or maybe in some respects international leader in this clean economy. Sean, can you talk about some of those things that would help drive Utah potentially towards that leadership role?
There are some important steps that we can be taking. One is creating a state commissioner office. And this office could be dedicated to addressing climate challenges, things like drought and wildfire and whatnot, but also climate-focused economic activities. And these are things like making sure that rural areas have the electricity transmission capacity to really ramp up the development of renewable resources. Another thing that the report looks at is putting together some kind of a technological solutions laboratory. And this has come up a little bit from at the legislature and the Utah System of Higher Education and others to really concentrate efforts from universities and academia to corporations to really bring some of these technologies and solutions to the front of our minds here in Utah. Another piece of that Technological Solutions Laboratory is creating a fund basically to support entrepreneurs in creating these clean energy innovations and bringing this stuff to market. Another thing we're focusing on is encouraging clean transportation options. We've been doing that with our electric vehicle infrastructure, but we should also be considering a lot more of the heavy vehicles. With these heavy vehicles, the issue is that while they are, there aren't that many of them on the road, they are really contributing a large proportion of both air quality challenge emissions and these greenhouse gas emissions across the state. So if we can do something in terms of not just kind of like this clean diesel technology, but really looking toward other technologies to maybe electrify these vehicles and give them the infrastructure that they can do, particularly for this heavy-duty vehicle, but shorter trips around the state. If we can do that, we can make big steps in terms of decreasing our vehicle emissions. And really, we talk about encouraging and exploring more stringent building energy efficiency codes. We aren't building our homes and buildings to maybe the top of the top in terms of energy efficiency, particularly our homes. And going back and retrofitting those are expensive. So if we could build up those energy efficiency codes, but go back and also retrofit a lot of older buildings and a lot of older homes that are currently inefficient, we can go a long way toward decreasing those emissions. And then finally, so the federal government's going to be doing a lot in terms of carbon dioxide emissions and methane emissions and refrigerants and whatnot. We, in terms of our Utah federal delegation, should really consider supporting some of the efforts that really that might make sense both at a federal level, but also in terms of Utah. And there are some things that are being discussed. And one of these is this agricultural producer carbon sequestration credits program. But the other is this carbon pricing mechanism, and both of which have potentially some downsides, but both of them potentially have some upsides. And those and other things are being proposed both at the state and federal level. And we should be really considering all of the options, and not just to do what's easiest, but to do what makes the most sense at the end of the day for the future of Utah and the United States.
So for the general public, things like this carbon sequestration credits program and carbon pricing mechanisms, what are those? Why are they important? Why should we be paying attention to those? Julianne?
Even if we do everything possible to reduce the emissions that we're producing, we're also going to need to capture carbon from the atmosphere or capture carbon from all sources and sequester that in order to avoid even worse global effects of climate change. So this carbon sequestration technology is very important. And market prices are for carbon are another avenue that's important to explore. I mean, we're in a global economy and other nations across the world are already working on this, and you know, it's not like the Utah economy exists in a bubble. So a lot of these technologies also provide economic opportunities. And as Sean was talking about, I mean, there are all kinds of avenues for technological innovation to occur. And as any business professor will tell you, the greatest opportunities in a technological revolution are at the beginning of that revolution. And Utah would do well both economically and environmentally to hop on that curve early in the game to seize the greatest opportunities.
Nick, thinking about this list that Sean just went through of or steps that Utah can take toward becoming a leader in the new climate-focused economy, you know, the idea of the State Commission, Technological Solutions Laboratory, Entrepreneurship Fund, clean transportation options, addressing building codes in some manner. What do you think of as being the low-hanging fruit for Utah?
Yeah, well, first, I mean, I just want to say that we need all of these things. This isn't like a menu where we should go and decide which one we want. I mean, this is a buffet where we need to load it all on our plates. Where most of the state is served by Rocky Mountain Power PacifiCorp, which is the largest utility in the West that does not have specific carbon reduction targets. Our state also has been reluctant to make specific carbon reduction targets, as you know, outlined in like the Utah roadmap. So I would say that we really need all of these, Peter, when we look at the timeline. Some of these, like things like building codes, are really low-hanging fruit. I think making things enticing for investors to do other things and having this fund, you know, I'm looking at this list right now. I mean, clean transportation, we have a lot of progress we can make very quickly. And the state has done a good job at focusing on charging infrastructure. But we also need to enable the market to really help us drive that by having, you know, a LEV or ZEV, low emissions vehicle or zero emissions vehicle standard, or something that can help us get all those cars here, because they won't ship them to our state right now because we don't have robust enough policies in place. I think it's kind of time for us to stop even looking at what the low-hanging fruit is. Some of that we've done already. We need to just get going on all of these steps and many others.
And I'll also add that a lot of these technologies can work in tandem with one another. If you have clean electricity generation for your general electricity source and electric vehicles and homes powered by electricity and batteries for those cars and buildings, I mean, eventually, technologically, those batteries and homes can help charge the grid in a future world to ensure greater reliability. We just saw in recent weeks, Arizona Public Service, the largest utility in Arizona, starting to offer incentives to homeowners to be able to use their batteries to help charge the grid for reliability of electricity. So there's a sort of brave new world out there of opportunity to explore with these new technologies, and there needs to be a sort of big picture evaluation of how everything works together to seize the greatest opportunities.
Julianne, I want to give you the last word here and ask you about something. We often look at things being here in Utah at the hub of the Mountain States. What are the opportunities for us to act on a regional basis?
Well, we have a regional electric utility that serves the largest proportion of customers in our state. So it's important for that utility to make a commitment to carbon-free electricity. And Utah can play a key role in that. Utah accounts for 43% of that utility's customers and load. And that's the largest in Pacific Coast system. So we could play a key role in influencing that regionally. There's also a lot of talk of moving towards a regional transmission organization for the West. The West is one of the few areas in the nation that does not have that. And transitioning that to that will create huge economic savings for ratepayers and create greater efficiencies in terms of land use, transmission build out, all these other things that need to be looked at when you start to get into the nitty gritty details of things. So, you know, Utah would do well to explore that. The states surrounding us have already done that. Colorado and Nevada this past spring did pass legislation calling for their utilities to explore joining RTOs. The Arizona Corporation Commission is starting to do that as well. That's the utility regulator in Arizona. So we're kind of the hole in the donut right now in terms of regional market exploration. And that would, getting into that now would help Utah towards greater opportunities and greater regionalization and opportunities in electricity distribution and generation. So, and savings. So that's important. And Utah has an opportunity too to be an innovator and a leader in the technology innovation that is occurring as well. I mean, we have an entrepreneurial spirit here. It's important for us to recognize those opportunities now and seize them now.
Julianne, Nick, Sean, thanks for this great conversation.
This has been Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Follow our work at utahfoundation.org.